From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Now bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham, Brendan behind the glass. It's a Martin Luther King Killer Bee edition. ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Have a good weekend.
I mean, I'm here. I was expecting a whole lot more than I got out of Wild Card Weekend so far. But other than that, you know what? Healthy and ready to go. What about yourself? Sounds good. You had a long drive.
Have you ever booked a flight on the wrong date and found out the morning that you were supposed to fly that you did that?
That's you?
I did that. I am embarrassed to admit that I did that.
Wait, you drove to Tulsa, but you were flying back?
So my wife has family in Norman, and she was going to spend a couple of days there. So I drove there and dropped her off, and then I was flying back. And
would you take a rental car?
No, I just she's driving back.
Oh, she's driving back.
Yeah.
Got it.
So, so I booked a flight from Tulsa yesterday morning to fly back. And I wake up around 6 a.m. yesterday morning, and I'm like, it's kind of weird that I have not received, like, any notifications about my upcoming flight. Because usually they'll ask, like, check in, you know, COVID protocols, are you checking a bag? So all this stuff, like, I wake up, I'm like, I haven't received any of that. Like, what's going on? So I look at the date. And the flight back was on March 20th.
Oops. How easy is that to fix?
I saw Brendan behind the glass.
I thought you missed it. Like, if you were off by a day, I get how that happens. I've never done it. March 20th?
March 20th was my scheduled flight home.
I hope they didn't do anything to take care of you. That's not nice.
They did. So
ridiculous.
So actually, like, out of just, like, in a sense of urgency, I was like, well, I better try to book something quickly. So I didn't even worry about my March 20th flight right away. They didn't have anything in Tulsa, but to go from Tulsa to Norman, you have to go through Oklahoma City. So there was a flight, luckily, out of Oklahoma City yesterday at noon. So I was able to get on that flight. Like, it worked out. And then I called them whenever I got home, and they went against their policy, which you have 24 hours for them to give you your money back, or you can turn it into, like, a flight voucher or flight credit. I talked them into getting my money back to the credit card. So I ended up getting very lucky, but that was my Sunday morning yesterday ahead of a wild card round in the NFL. Scheduled a flight that was supposed to be on January 16th on March 20th. So,
well, all's well that ends well. At least you got home safely and you got to see the same kind of games that we got to see.
Yeah, it was not a great start to Super Wild Card Weekend. Maybe we'll get a good game tonight between the Rams and the Cardinals. Talk about all of the games in greater detail. Steelers hung around for a little bit. It was a good little college try. The middle game yesterday was a good one, I thought. You know, it had some drama. It had a lot of controversy and some storylines we can get into throughout the show. We'll be here till 3 Monday edition, Martin Luther King Jr. edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Another thing, Houston Texans very active already. Which, what I find fascinating about this, and we'll get into it, well, Brian Flores, Hines Ward, Joe Lombardi, the three coaches they've always interviewed. Like, if you look at Texans' Twitter, they're being very active, like, on producing content. Like, I know this is kind of like the modern day of NFL and really teams that they produce their own content, but you had, like, takeaways from the Nick Caserio press conference. You're having, like, stories already written about every single candidate. It's pretty interesting how they're handling this.
Well, I think it's almost like a receipt. So that they can go back to the NFL and go, look at all the guys that we interviewed, so that they can't be accused of having their one guy focusing in on that one guy and then making sure that, you know, they just did a couple others just for formalities to cover their butt. This is their way of saying, hey, look, I got my receipt. Look at all the different interviews that I did with all these different people. We did what we were supposed to do.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I think they like to get the clicks, right? I mean, they're also selling advertisement on their website, but they're doing a good job of it. I think they're actually doing really good in terms of producing that content. But what do you think of these names so far that they've interviewed? Brian Flores was the first one that we heard.
And that one, of course, that's a no-brainer. And to me, I still think that I know you're on Mayo and everybody seems to think that that's the natural selection for them. But I think that if it's Mayo or Flores, it was expected. The other two names, like, what the hell are you doing?
I'm not Mayo or Bus, for the record.
Because I give you credit for the first one to bring it up and say, you know, I had seen his name, but when we were having our group text chat about it, you were the first one to say, I think there's another name. So that's what I'm saying. I'm not saying you're right. hell-bent on him being the guy.
There's a lot of candidates that are out there that I could get behind. I'm hoping the Texans hire a head coach that I can get behind, because I was never behind the David Culley hire. Like that made no sense from the start, even though Nick Caserio would tell you that they thought it was the right hire at the time, and they still think it was the right hire at the time. We'll get into that a little bit later on in the Killer Bees as well. But like the Brian Flores, I'm not a huge fan of Brian Flores. We've talked about this last week. I think he's a Bill O'Brien version coming from that Patriot system of Bill Belichick. Under 500 in the three seasons he was there, never made the playoffs, fired tons of offensive coaches. But we'll see what the Texans do there. Let's get into one of the other names. Hines Ward, first off. Like you said, the other two names, what in the world are they doing interviewing those two guys? What was your reaction whenever you saw the Texans interviewed Hines Ward to be the fifth head coach in Houston Texans football history?
Like, we talk about never been a coordinator guy. We talk about all these other things. But when you look at Hines Ward, you say, this is all about just what, culture and locker room? Because he was always a tough guy. He was always a locker room guy. He was always a captain and a leadership guy. But other than that, in terms of the coaching aspects of it, I don't see where I would feel really good about him being the head coach of my football team, let alone the offensive coordinator. And he was out of the league last year. He was where, in college?
He's in college. I think it was FIU or FAU.
Yeah, so I'm like,
wide receivers coach, by the way.
How does that elevation to NFL head coaching interview excite anybody? Sure, the name from a player perspective should, but from a standpoint of making sure the leader of men for your football team for the foreseeable future is Hines Ward, I don't see the resume and the experience that gets me excited. I say, here's a guy that might be a great position coach. If you want him to make your receivers coach, I'm all for that. But if you want him to make him your head coach or your offensive coordinator, I'll pass.
What's the value for you for the resume and the experience? Because to me, there's two different ways to look at it. Like, if you'd have hired Bill Belichick, you know, 3 years into being an assistant coach, my money's on that he would have turned out to be a pretty good head coach in the NFL. I don't think it would have changed a whole lot. Now, situation, the fact that he had Brady, that's something that elevated his career. There's no doubt about it. But what do you think the value is of the experience and the resume for a potential head coaching candidate?
Especially in what the Texan situation lays out to be for whoever takes the job. I think the value is you've had experiences in, if one and preferably more than one situation, where whether you were the head coach or a coordinator, but a position of stature within the coaching staff and management, so that you can understand what works and what doesn't. And so you can understand adjusting on the fly. So you can understand everything from if you're Baltimore and you draft Lamar Jackson and you realize the smart move isn't to force Lamar Jackson to play your style, it's to make a style and a system that's fit around him, to the cultural locker room standpoint of saying, look, if we've got a lot of veterans, if we've got a lot of guys in a losing situation that might be unhappy, how am I going to kind of alter things so that it stays kind of even keel, as opposed to I've got a veteran-laden locker room that's ready to win now. How do I kind of stay hands off a little bit more and let my guys from Monday through Thursday handle their business and then really dive down when I have to step in from Friday through Sunday? I think those are the kind of things that add value to a resume. That's where I'm looking first and foremost. And you look at a guy like Mayo, you just say, hey, look, from a player's perspective, and then as it translates to a coaching perspective, the one concern I have is the only way you know is the Patriots way, which is great when you're winning. And he did that for the majority of his career. But when you look at it from the perspective of this situation with the Texans, I don't know if that's the exact only resume that I want coming into a locker room. I need you to have some other experiences that aren't so rosy, so that you might be able to have a more well-rounded approach to how you handle this.
I think the experience can be a bit overrated. I don't think that it means more than nothing. I mean, I'm not trying to deny that. I'm not going to die on that hill. And this isn't like me advocating for Hines Ward either. I think that'd be a terrible hire. You bring up an interesting conversation, like the X's and O's. Like, who is the guy that's setting the X's and O's? Like, last year when they hired David Culley, was David Culley the guy setting up the X's and O's on offense or defense? Like, is this all just like a Nick Caserio joint? Like, where he says, this is the way we're going to be run. This is what we're going to do on offense, and I'm going to go find an offensive coordinator that's willing to do what I'm telling him to do. I'm going to go find a defensive coordinator that's going to have a system that I want to be the Houston Texans system. Like, who is the orchestrator here? Who's the guy making all the decisions?
It's obviously Caserio, but you can't say that he did that on the offensive side of the ball a year ago, because he kept a guy that had a system that was not his, and he kept a guy.
You're talking about
Kelly,
but that was the Patriots' way. It's a Patriots system because he was a Bill O'Brien. You know, he learned from Bill O'Brien.
Yeah, you would expect the majority of it was Patriots' way, but it wasn't his way, right? And I still think he wants to put his stamp on it. So I don't know. I think he was doing that more just in case Deshaun comes back. because of the fact that when they were trying to appease Deshaun, one of the things he even said was, yeah, I like the way Tim calls plays. I'd like to keep him around. But once you knew that it was cut and dried, he wasn't coming back, you knew Nick was going to go out. We said this, even if Culley keeps his job, Tim Kelly's not going to be back because Nick's going to go get his guy now that Deshaun's out of the picture.
Yeah. And the final name, as we list the three names that have been interviewed, I expect we're going to have a couple more names by the time we're done with this show today. Yeah. Joe Lombardi, the grandson of Vince Lombardi, who's currently the offensive coordinator with the Chargers. We know that Brandon Staley is the dude that's making all of those decisions. Looking at some stuff on Joe Lombardi, like he was the quarterback's coach in New Orleans. We're going to ask Brendan here in a second because he was the OC with the Lions from 04 to 05. You see that. And first, like, Lombardi's going to draw some interest because he's the grandson of Vince Lombardi and the trophy's named the Lombardi Trophy. What were some of the immediate thoughts you had when Joe Lombardi was one of the candidates interviewing for the Texans head coaching job?
Why? Why? Right off the top. Why? Because aside from his name, you know what? You want a guy that's been in a management position in which you have some form of control. In New Orleans, you weren't controlling the playbook. You weren't controlling the plays. You weren't doing anything that because Sean Payton and Drew Brees were doing that and doing that all the time. You were observing and you were learning and you hope that through osmosis it gave you some you know benefits on your resume. But when I look at it, even with the Chargers, and I'm going, okay, and you know what? And you fell into a really good young quarterback. Maybe that helps Davis Mills if you get the gig, but there's no Patriots Association. There's no connection of anything to speak of that tells me, hey, there's a relationship and a communication level between him and the general manager and others. So I'm like, okay, this is just for, you know, the on the surface attention that it's going to get throughout the league. Other than that, I don't see any reason why you want this guy in your building.
Brendan, you lived through Joe Lombardi as the OC of your football team, the Detroit Lions, in 2014-2015. What were some thoughts watching him orchestrate an offense?
The only guy the Lions have had on a staff in recent memory that I would like say is worse to have as your head coach is Matt Patricia. I went back when I saw that they were interviewing Lombardi and looked at my tweets that included the name Lombardi.
Oh, that's awesome.
You would have thought I was a miserable human being. I mean, the Lions are obviously a laughingstock organization. But I feel like for the most part, in Matt Stafford's tenure as the quarterback there, their offenses were good.
Uh-huh.
They were not good under Lombardi. It was the only stint of his career where they had bad offenses.
Not a ringing endorsement.
Hate him. That would be – you would struggle to find a choice that I would endorse less.
David
wow.
Cullen.
I think I prefer Culley.
It's a lateral move between going from Culley to Lombardi.
Yeah, it's close. It's pretty close.
Wow, okay. So Brian Flores, Hines Ward, Joe Lombardi, the three known interviews for the Houston Texans. More to come, no doubt about it. Caserio says they're going to be diligent in this. They're going to be patient in this. We'll see to come. I'm willing to bet we're going to see another name or two surface by the time we're done with this show. Also, you know what day it is today? Betty White Day. She would have been 100 years old today. There's a Betty White challenge going around, Joel. Donate $5 to a local animal shelter. I know this is a cause that's near and dear to your heart.
It is. It is indeed. And, of course, first and foremost, it's MLK Day. So we want to make sure that we always mention that first. But from the Betty White perspective, she would have been 100 today. So that's amazing in itself. And the lady never slowed down. But her one passion, other than doing everything that she did in the entertainment world, was to be very, very concerned at all times about pets. And so just the fact that even in her passing, that you know, the animal shelters are going to benefit by this. And the Betty White challenge is to donate $5 to whether it's the Humane Society or one of the shelters near you. And they're hoping it makes an impactful difference. And just seeing some, you know, and obviously Lisa, as you mentioned, is always on top of these things. But some of these stories of some of these dogs that didn't ask for or sign up some of the hell they've been through. But then they turn out to be, you know, really good animals, but it's hard to find them a home. And so you got to have the right food and shelter just to keep them alive so that they can. It's a worthwhile cause. And obviously everybody was a big fan of Betty White. So hopefully people jump on board.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. We're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. He's at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Branham. When we come back, let's take a look at some of these wild card games around the NFL. Take a look at the AFC side of the bracket when we return. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Before we go to the break, I want to tell you about new brakes. Why? Because they work and because they do a great job and because they've done my brakes and many, many others that are listening to us right now that listen to us on a daily basis that hit me up and said, Joel, what's the name of the brake company that you use? And then when I told them and they went to nubrakes.com and they mentioned ESPN 97.5, they saved 10%. But more than that, they save time, which is saving you money. And then they realized all the other details that are extremely important, too, because at New Brakes, they have the same rates as any brake shop in town. they use the same parts as any brake shop in town. And the biggest difference is instead of you going to them and waiting in a waiting room and spending hours at the mercy of a mechanic, they come to you to do what they do. They can come to your house. They can come to your job. They can go wherever you are and meet you there while you're doing other things. You're multitasking. So you're saving time, which is saving money. Then you're saving even more because a certified technician that only does brakes comes to you, fixes your brakes, and then goes back to his next job. That's it. It took my brake job was less than 40 minutes. They did it here at the station while we were doing the show. It was painless. They did a fantastic job. I could not be happier, and you can be the next in line to get the same kind of treatment and get the same kind of results. Check them out today, nubrakes.com. That's nubrakes.com.
ESPN 97.5.
Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Super wild card round in the NFL. So far, they weren't all duds. I'm not going to go as far to say all five were duds. We saw 2.5. I was going to give you two.
Two.
What's
and
the half?
The Cowboys-Niners game, for sure.
Yeah.
And the Bengals-Raiders game was kind of, to me, the second one.
Yeah, that's my two right there.
There was one.
Pittsburgh was leading 7-0 in the second quarter.
Yeah, I mean, between the second getting all the way in the second quarter of that one, and then the other one that was at least, it wasn't a
blow. Tampa-Philly?
No, that was horrible from the start. And we're going to get to the officials, I would imagine, at some point. But again, this is kind of like baseball playoffs and otherwise. This is the last time of the year that you ever want to start talking about the officials, but they were prevalent through a lot of these games. But it really annoyed me that the NFL, for as much of the pomp and circumstance and adding another wild card team so that there was another game, there was even more to be looking forward to. And we went back and forth and hemmed and hawed between the fact that, you know, two of us hated the Monday night game, but all of us were excited about the fact with multiple games on multiple days, this was fantastic. The last thing you would have expected is that almost all of them, you're like, oh, God, come on, man. I mean, I felt like I basically blew a Sunday for the most part because that Tampa game from the get-go, thanks to a really phantom roughing the passer on Brady right off the get-go, but then it was just delaying the inevitable. But I was expecting New England-Buffalo to be a good game, and it wasn't. And I had no chance of hoping that the game last night was going to be a good game. And actually, like you said, for at least a quarter, I was like, wait a minute now. Maybe this is the Cinderella for Ben that I said was impossible. But yeah, aside from being glued to that Niners-Cowboys game, and then the fact that the Bengals-Raiders game was just for about three quarters and then got real interesting in the final, with the exception of the officials, I was like, I'm disappointed.
Let's start there. Bengals with their first playoff win in 31 years since the 1990 season. They won the playoff game in 91, but it was the 1990 season. They take on Tennessee Saturday at 3:30. Afterwards, Joe Burrow, first playoff win. He was thrilled.
Yeah, it's exciting. It's exciting for the city, for the state. But, you know, we're not going to dwell on that. We're moving forward. We're ready. Whoever we got to play next, we'll be ready to go out and execute the game plan.
Yeah, whatever, we won. I actually like that attitude from Joe Burrow. Like, you don't want to get too high in a wild card playoff win. I thought that the Bengals were a little bit too high after clinching the division title during the regular season, so I liked seeing the other end from Joe Burrow. You mentioned the officials in this one. Joe Burrow, first half, I believe it was running towards the sideline, did not step out of bounds, threw the ball into the end zone that was caught. There was a whistle that was blown during the play. I don't care what the official said after the game to the pool reporter. Raiders got absolutely hosed on this play. There was an inadvertent whistle during the play,
yeah,
and somehow the touchdown stood.
Yeah, you know what? And it goes to my days even with pickup basketball. The fact of the matter is that if anybody makes a noise that sounds like they called a foul and anybody stops for any particular reason or eases up at all, it's a do-over. You check it up on top and you do it again. The fact is whether he was blowing it because he thought he stepped out of bounds and then they looked at the review and said he didn't step out of bounds, and Cower in the studio was so adamant about, did you tell us that you checked the audio? The audio. Because it was very, very, very easy to hear the whistle.
Yes.
And none of us can sit there and say every player did or did not stop or it affected them. It's just like the punt that hit the bottom of the scoreboard in Dallas. The fact is, whether if you think it affected anybody or not, the rules should state, do it over. do it over. And if they're in the position to do it again, they'll score.
Yeah, NFL rules say that that should not have been the outcome of the play. You have the inadvertent whistle. It should go back to the previous play. And like you said, the do-over, just like off of the scoreboard. Rich Bisaccia, well, after the game.
And I was going to say, the other one from an official standpoint later in the game in the final drive that we might be talking about if it was successful, the final drive for the Raiders, was there was a horrendous roughing the passer helmet-to-helmet call in that drive that should not have been called, that gave the Raiders 15 extra yards and moved them deep into Cincinnati territory. And you're like, okay, and this is why Jerome Boger's staff is basically being told, you're done doing playoff games this year.
Right, which we don't know if that was going to be the case or not. They probably get reevaluated after the week. But Rich Bisaccia, after the game, said we didn't lose because of the referees.
I think that's a good crew. I think there's a lot of things that won in the game, right, both ways. A lot of things went both ways. They picked the one up on the one deal over there, and the ball came back, and so I got enough problems. My job, I can't do the officiating, too.
I like that answer. Don't blame officials. If you blame officials, you're taking the low road. It's why you're the most penalized team in the NFL.
You say that about Ben DeBose, too, and I couldn't agree more.
Do you?
Hey, here's the other thing. From a Bisaccia standpoint, I do care if he gets the job or not, right, and I think he's going to get looked over for it, but if you caught this after they got home, he stayed up till the wee hours of the night to write handwritten message cards to every player that played for him. Good for him, man. I mean, doing it the right way and showing that he cares. That dude was in an unenviable position from the time he took over for Gruden and did one hell of a job.
Now, the question becomes, do you bring back Rich Bisaccia if you're Mark Davis and the head coach of the Las Vegas Raiders? I wouldn't bring him back. I understand that he's done a great job, but as a GM and as a decision maker, you're not making decisions on what you have done. You're making decisions on what you expect it to be going forward. Bisaccia deserves the job, yes, but I feel like there's better candidates out there. I would hire somebody else, and I would make Rich Bisaccia the highest-paid assistant head coach, special teams coordinator in the NFL. If the Raiders don't sign Rich Bisaccia as the head coach, do you think somebody else in the NFL is going to? Absolutely not. And not as a head coach.
No, not as a head coach, but a position coach, right?
That's why you make him the highest paid special teams coordinator.
But I don't even have to make him the highest paid, because I think as long as you retain him and take care of him to a certain level, that, you know, good on you. Because I think that the bigger thing is, when you say going forward, what's your roster and what's your expectations? If it was the Texans, then sure, you could take your growing pains along with Rich Bisaccia. But because you're the Raiders, and because you still have, you know, a really good quarterback, and you've got a lot of good talent on that roster, and you're a playoff team, you don't let someone go through growing pains and get their first full-time head coaching job starting next season. You go and get someone that's been there, done that, and hopes to do it again the next season and beyond for you. So that's why I agree with you. They got to get somebody else. If they can keep him, that's fantastic. But if he doesn't get it, you can't feel sorry for him. He did a good job. He's got enough contacts in the league. He'll find another job.
Buffalo defeats the Patriots 47-17. Josh Allen with 5 touchdowns in this game. Screw your sub-freezing temperature. Biggest loss in Bill Belichick's playoff career. Bills already back-to-back AFC East champions. I think this was Buffalo taking old Yeller out back. Buffalo, the superior team over New England, now and going forward in the foreseeable future.
We knew they had the better roster. This is the third time that they were meeting, and it was the rubber match. But at the same time, you knew being in Buffalo, and we talked about this on Friday, they had the better, more complete team. And they showed it. And the fact that they just, I mean, the one thing you don't expect is, offensively, you expect that the Patriots could have problems with a rookie first time in the playoffs quarterback. But the fact that they were just used on defense, which is Belichick's specialty, the fact that, you know, was it 5 or 7 straight drives where they just scored touchdown after touchdown after touchdown, you're like, oh my God, Bill, pull the emergency brake. What the hell's going on? That was embarrassing if you're a Patriots fan. But you know what? If you're a Bills fan, that's a big momentum builder going into the next weekend.
Now in Kansas City, this was the literal old Yeller. This was Pat Mahomes ending the career of Ben Roethlisberger, 42-21. Yeah, absolutely.
I think it ended him as a Steeler, but even the way he left the door mildly cracked open. Nah. If someone else is willing to throw a whole lot of money at him for a year or two, I think he could go.
One, I don't think that would be the case. I don't think anybody's going to throw big money at Big Ben. Like, okay, he hasn't looked great. And listening to Big Ben in his post-game sound, I mean, he said, I'm glad to have been a Steeler for my entire career. I'm looking forward to retirement. Now, stuff changes a lot. But right now, I think we've seen the end of Big Ben. Look, things change, and you start to miss it. But my thought is that he's done, absolutely done. Cute for a moment in this game, the T.J. Watt touchdown, which kind of reminisced his brother back in the day, made it 7-0 in the second quarter, but the Chiefs just too much. Pat Mahomes, 5 touchdowns, and it sets up a big one next Sunday night as the Buffalo Bills go into Arrowhead to take on Kansas City.
The night games next weekend already scheduled are going to be fantastic and very cold, but you look at it and you say, you know what, from the standpoint of Roethlisberger, hell of a career. I guess more so than Eli Manning, he's basically going to be a Hall of Famer. There's not a whole lot of debate, although there's still some people that are wanting to debate it. He has the accomplishments across the board. But you know what? Offensively, they were limited, and it showed. And it took one guy's extraordinary efforts in the first quarter and some in Watt just to keep them, you know, in a, where they were leading 7-0. But you just knew, as we've said all along, and I've been very adamant about, the Chiefs don't have any season-ending injuries on their roster. It was just getting right. And all they needed was a team that they throttled 3 weeks ago, and they got right again. And once they got right, they kept rolling, and it was never in question. And that's why everyone else in the AFC, even the Buffalo Bills, have to pay attention and be aware. This team's been there, done that, and they're looking like they're ready to do it again.
Yeah, I can't wait for that Bills-KC game. 5399 texting in. 5 TDs for Josh Allen. He definitely took that Bart Scott Viagra advice. Which, did you see the NFL, by the way, warned players not to do it?
No.
Yeah, the NFL sent, I think, a memo to all the players saying, make sure that you, if you're doing this, you better make sure that you're not going to get busted. Like, you better make sure that it's
busted by the players' wives and girlfriends or the league?
No. Apparently, there's a drug in it that would pop a PED test.
Pop a lot of things.
You have to have a prescription in order to do it.
Okay.
I believe. 713-780.
Others that are going to be negatively affected through the playoffs in cold weather then.
I mean, these are professional athletes in a pretty ripe age of their life. I don't think that they have to worry about that. 713-780-ESPN.
Stage is the smallest and the lights are the dimmest.
Sure. 713-780-3776. David Culley was the right hire and still is. That's the quote of Nick Caserio. What's he talking about? Was he right? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Who's this?
Hey, this is Trey Wingo. You're listening to ESPN 97.5 Houston. Hello.
Razor sharp commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Yeah, we hired David because we thought he was the best fit for the Houston Texans organization at the time, and I still feel that way. So, again, this is a year-to-year endeavor and what we do. So each year is its own entity. You kind of have to look at it its own bucket. And we made a commitment to David because we thought and we felt that he was the best coach for our organization at that time, and we still feel that way.
Best fit at the time and still feel that way. That's not saying that you got it wrong. And look, I don't think that this is, like, I'm not trying to go in the angle where, like, oh, Nick Caserio got this horribly wrong. I think we were all over it and smelled this for what it was at the very beginning. That the reason you brought in a David Culley, and now contract aside, the reason you brought in David Culley was to be the stopgap, was to be the bridge. And I've heard a lot of people say, oh, Nick Caserio got this hire wrong. He whiffed on David Culley. Like, it was a terrible decision, when the logic for the hire was to sustain the Houston Texans for a year or two, to get them over this terrible time when they're going to win 4 games in 2021, where they're going to win somewhere between 4 to 6 games in 2022. The idea was never to bring David Culley to come in here and turn the Texans around and do this playoff team. By the time they wanted to get back into the playoffs, David Culley was going to be long gone, and the Houston Texans were going to be on to their second head coach.
But this is why we always stress on this station, and particularly with this show, we just call it like we see it. And this is also why we kind of temper our emotions based on the situation. And the fact is, if this was a playoff caliber team, if this was the Texans team of a few years ago that was winning the division, getting into the playoffs, and then suddenly needed a head coach, we would be throwing up red flags and flares and going off at a high decibel level and volume level because of the fact that it was the absolutely wrong choice for a team like that. But because the team was in shambles, because it was a complete and utter rebuild from the front office to the roster, to the fact that we knew that the best scenario for this team was going to be to suck, embrace it, get draft picks, rebuild, restart, do it all, then we weren't going to make that big of a stink about it. We didn't like the hire. We didn't agree with the hire. But we weren't going to go to the level of really, you know, doing some kind of a picket line or, like, crazy over-the-top disputing it, because of the fact we knew what they were. And so that's why I think the rest of the city kind of fell in line too, going, look, with as much as this thing is in shambles and everything is going south, including the Deshaun Watson situation and everything else too, you're like, okay, he's the wrong guy and no one thinks he's the right guy. But at the same time, because of where they are, it doesn't really matter.
Exactly. And to me, it's very telling. Like, a lot of people say that Nick Caserio doesn't say a lot when he speaks. And for the most part, that's true. But he says some things that are critical if you're listening. I mean, we jumped all over the press conference he had at the beginning of the year. And when he said, look, this season's not going to be based on the results. It's going to be based on the process. So when you're looking at the 2021 season and you're looking at it based on the process, not the results, they didn't care how many games David Culley won. That's why he said it was the best fit at the time, and they still feel that way. And there's two things I've been hearing a lot that really don't make a whole lot of sense to me, and one of them is because the Texans said this in their own press release, like the philosophical difference between Nick Caserio and David Culley. Like, people are still trying to spin that that was the reason that the Texans got rid of David Culley. No, they just wanted somebody else to be the head coach. They feel like they have to strike now because whoever it is that they want, whether it's Flores, whether it's Hines Ward, Joe Lombardi, Gerard Mayo, whoever it is that they want, they feel like they have to do it right now. Caserio has to hitch his wagon to the candidate right now. It had nothing to do with philosophy.
No, absolutely not. But it also had everything to do with the fact that you got to be careful what you wish for. You wished for a guy that was going to be a bridge gap guy, but knew what he was doing. And you found out that even he admitted at the end of the year, he was over his head.
Yeah.
And so he couldn't even do what you were asking him to do and paying him handsomely to do. And so that's why you had to make a change, too.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Go out to the HR&P listener line. Get Gary in here. Gary, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. Go ahead.
Hey, guys.
What's up, Gary?
Just want to say on Caserio, I mean, he's lying. Yeah, I mean, there's zero way that you can spend firing a first-year head coach that you gave a five-year contract that's not a failure. Like, we get it, he wasn't brought in to win the Super Bowl, but you could not have wanted to bring this guy in for 1 year and then pay him out whatever, $17 million. Like, that couldn't have been the plan. And if the plan fails, then it's a failure. And I just think so often Caserio comes up, he gives you a word salad, and that's a better way of what I want to say. Or he just flat out lies, but he does it eloquently, and so people try to explain it, but, like, he's just lying. You know what I mean? Like, it's just
he's a smart used car salesman.
He's a failure. And that's just what it is. Every time he comes up and speaks, he either says something that's not true or he just says a bunch of words and doesn't answer questions. And frankly, it's insulting. And anybody who's paying attention can see it.
Appreciate the call, Gary.
Look, I mean, if you're expecting this guy to be brutally honest and tell you everything that he knows and everything that went into it, then, I mean, he probably does have a car he could sell you or, you know, some swampland in Florida. Because the fact is he's a little bit more over the top. He is a smart used car salesman. But the thing is like Gary's call goes exactly what I was saying. Look, they had a plan in mind and a skill set in mind for the guy that they hired. That's why they feel like they hired the right guy in David Culley. They just didn't know that when they hired David Culley that he was going to turn out to be a guy that was so over his head that even some of the things they felt like were the most simplistic parts of the job, he couldn't orchestrate on a daily basis, let alone on game day when he obviously couldn't, you know, fulfill a lot of the duties that a head coach needs to do. And they realized, hey, as much as this was going to be for a couple of years, but never more than three or four, we figured out that in short time, this isn't going to even survive more than one. We were willing to give it two because we were willing to suck one more year to get all the picks we could. But when we realized how bad it had gotten, both in the locker room and on the field, we couldn't even. And then, like you said, and then maybe a candidate that they had their eye on also became available prematurely. That was just a storm that they couldn't weather.
I like the way that Gary phrased it, that it's an eloquent speaker. Uh-huh. That's what Nick Caserio is. And look, a lot of it is words. You know what? Gary didn't say it. Thank
that's
you, Gary, for
thing.
Doing that. Yeah. But like, he does say some things that let you in a little bit. I mean, whenever he said that it's right now we're looking at this season more on the process than the results, it lets you know that his mindset was we're not expecting to win a lot of games this year, and he was absolutely right. I thought whenever he spoke at the press conference the other day, he tipped his hand on the next type of head coach that the Houston Texans are going to bring in here. I also felt that when he said that David Culley was the right we felt that he was the right hire at the time, and we still feel that way, is a huge indicator that they were not expecting David Culley to win. But Gary's points are good, and we also point out all the flaws that Nick Caserio has.
But it's also from any general manager's perspective, whether you're doing it with a player that he drafted highly or a coach or otherwise, he's also going to cover his own rear end, too. And so he still believes he hired the right guy because he's the general manager that hired him, and he's trying to keep a little of the heat off of him that he so rightly so is going to face and the scrutiny because of the fact that this only lasted 1 year instead of five.
Look, and that he's hiring his second head coach in his second year on the job is something that you look at on the surface and you're like, whoa, what is going on? Now, if you dig a little bit deeper and you're like, okay, David Culley was overwhelmed with the position, there's other people that are coming open that he wants to hire, it makes some sort of sense. But if you look at it just on that surface level where a GM is hiring his second coach year two into his tenure as the general manager, that's eye-popping, sure. We point out all of the things that Caserio's done that kind of raises our eyebrows a little bit. You traded a sixth-rounder for Ryan Finley. You traded a fifth-rounder for Anthony Miller. You traded a seventh-rounder to Green Bay for a corner that you cut the next week. You didn't have the foresight to trade Zach Cunningham in the offseason when he was very good in the 3-4 as opposed to a 4-3 when he just doesn't fit that type of scheme. You hired David Culley, and it all comes back down to it. Like, he's hiring his second head coach in two seasons. And do you trust Nick Caserio to make that hire? 713-780-ESPN. Do you trust Nick Caserio to make a successful hire for the fifth head coach in Houston Texans history? 713-780-3776. We'll kick that around also when we come back. Rockets over Sacramento yesterday. A shorthanded Sacramento team. We'll do it when we return. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real. Let's go. Fun. Sports. All teams covered. No talking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Aggie Mad texting in, if it's a year-by-year situation, then why a four-year contract? That's my only issue with it all. Pretty dumb. That's kind of where I get lost with it, too. Like, I don't mind firing a head coach after year one. I can understand the logic of a stopgap bridge head coach whenever you're going to be bad for a couple of years, maybe even a few years. But the guaranteed part where you guarantee the 4 years of a five-year contract, according to reports, is something where you kind of like, okay, what's the story behind that? Because that's when you're talking out of both sides of your mouth. That's when you're contradicting yourself.
Well, you know, when Aggie, Matt, and I are always on the same page, this is another example of it. The fact that I said last week, look, I understand this was your short-term fix. This was your bridge. This was your, you know, puppet in waiting. But at the same time, it's absolutely spot on the fact that then there should have never been. I get from an agent's perspective, they're going to get in and try and get some more job security out of it, and that's fine too. But even four seemed like too much, but that would have been the absolute maximum I would take this, because even for the layman that doesn't have a whole lot of knowledge of the situation, looking at it, you could just look at the roster and know how bad it was going to be short term and realize, look, this is a guy that's just going to be a guy for a couple of years while you do what you need to do, both on and off the field, to try and get you going in the right direction as quick as possible, hit the ground running. So it seemed like a little excessive even at four to go five. And remember now, when it first came out, none of the terms were available. So they didn't want you to know how much they had to overextend. But it's just like Caserio's deal for his own self, which was 6 years. The fact that this was so bad, so upside down, that you had to entice them with years and money and guarantees to get anyone to take the gig. So I think that they felt like, and at least, like I said, Culley should be buying his agent all kinds of holiday gifts and presents because of the fact that he did him a really solid move by getting him the deal that he got.
I mean, I don't think you needed to give 6 years to Nick Caserio. It wasn't really a hot commodity on the market.
I agree, but he got it.
He got it, and I think that was kind of, I mean, nepotism's the wrong word because he's not related, but it was kind of borderline nepotism. Like, he's in the family. He's one of us. Well, he was an Easterby boy.
But you got Jack pushing for Cal because Jack knew it was saving his ass in the process by getting him in here. And the fact that, again, whether you didn't want to admit it publicly or not, internally and behind the scenes when they were meeting with whoever they were going to bring in, it was going to be a factor. It was going to be a financial factor. It was going to be a length of contract factor, because no one's going to go in, whether it's their first rodeo or not, and say, I want that gig for whatever, how many years and how much money you're going to give me. And it was even more of a big deal for the head coach, because the head coach was being left with a cupboard that was bare with a rat problem. You know, you had a ton to deal with that no one was signing up for like 2 or 3 years.
King of Twitch saying $22 million is that's grounds for termination. And then you see the other side of it on a text 5399. I think it's for perception. We sucked last year, so we hire a new coach to show we are trying, showing the money, even though we didn't expect much difference. That's kind of where I get lost. Like, I can totally understand the stopgap. I can totally understand the bridge. You know, having to spend $22 million on a one-year head coach, that's something that's alarming, especially if I'm Cal McNair and the investors to the Houston Texans. If you're looking for a positive spin to that, I'm not really always on the side of let's back Nick Caserio, is that that shouldn't affect the product on the field. Like, you're still going to spend the salary cap money. You're still going to spend up to that.
Right.
The $22 million is a sunk cost that should not affect the product on the field or who you're bringing in on this coaching staff going
forward.
No, but
it's going to, you know what, and it should rightfully affect every owner that's in any kind of business, let alone specifically in sports, right? I understand that it's just coming out of their orifices that they got so much cash. But at a certain point, we've seen it with Tillman Fertitta. At a certain point, especially when your other businesses aren't flourishing, you spend even more time looking at the bottom. I worked for an owner that no matter how good it was looking at the bottom line on a daily basis and nitpicking even the most minimal expenses. So it should matter to you in terms of the hiring, firing process. Did I get the right guy that we constantly are evaluating with Caserio? I got to start questioning if I got the right guy, if he's flippantly throwing away $22 million.
His money, too. And look, that's how those wealthy men get wealthy, right? Like, they pinch pennies. They try to optimize every single thing. And it was an expensive mistake. $22 million is significant, no doubt about it. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Speaking of Tillman Fertitta, his team was in Sacramento yesterday playing a shorthanded Kings team. They had a couple of players on the COVID list that didn't play, a couple of their best players. But the Rockets get the victory on the road, 118-112. Rockets now 13-32 on the season. Eric Gordon had a big game, which is great for his trade value. You're expecting to see him get traded before the NBA trade deadline in a few weeks. Christian Wood with he's a walking double-double that doesn't play defense. He got a walking double-double yesterday, 23 points, 14 rebounds, and Kevin Porter Jr. The numbers are good, 23.7 assists, but he did turn it over six times.
Six turnovers. He got hot late. He was making his three ball, but again, it's a work in progress, and for as much as everybody wants to talk about his crunch time stats, you still have to be deeply concerned about his full game stats because the turnovers are high, the shooting percentage is low, but yet he's making threes at clutch time, so Rockets fans are drinking more Kool-Aid and feeling very satisfied. The fact is, with the other two guys, they've shown you everything and more that they ever needed to show, not just you, but show the rest of the league. At a certain point, when do you start kind of scaling them back or pulling the plug a little bit on those two guys and realizing, hey, between now and the trade deadline, the one thing that could really screw us is an injury? And they've shown the rest of the league that they're still fully capable of doing everything that any team trying to acquire them wants them to do. Don't push it too far with too many minutes in too many situations where they could get hurt and then really be the only reason why you can't get some kind of value for them before the deadline.
Don't look now, but the Rockets only 5.5 games back out of the 10th spot in the Western Conference playoff
Not
race.
Not worried at all.
Portland's currently in 10th place, though, 17-25.
They got to get
him Lillard.
They're
teams.
Getting back at a certain point.
Yeah.
Rockets, not so much.
Well, I saw some reports that Lillard might be shut down like for the season. With his
I mean, if by the time he's ready to come back, it's bleak in terms of their playoff hopes, I guess. But look, that's in full. That team, no matter how much they want you to believe that they're in it for the long haul, they're in it for now, and their roster is built for now with some of the moves they made, even Norman Powell last year and some of the giving up a guy like Gary Trent Jr. So they're still trying to make it, and they're just trying to hang on till he gets back. The interesting thing now is, does that alter the CJ McCollum trade talks? Because they can't afford to be without both of them until Lillard gets back.
Now, the Rockets do have the third worst record in the NBA. And
good.
We've been talking about how it's better for the Rockets this year to finish in the bottom four than to finish 10th place in the Western Conference in that little play-in tournament. Mm-hmm. But it does seem like the Rockets will finish in the bottom four. Third worst record currently in the NBA.
First of all, I don't know if this is on the Rockets or if this is on the league. But the fact that there was a game going on and that there was maybe five people on Twitter that alerted me at the end of the Cowboys game.
Yeah.
That there was actually a Rockets. I thought it was a late night game. I thought it was a game that I could tune into if the Chiefs-Steelers game was bad in the second half. And all of a sudden, I see like two of the Red Rowdies and the guy that's always the amateur capologist for the Rockets, David Wiener.
Oh, yeah, he's great.
Yeah, and stuff. All of a sudden, they were all dialed into, like, what happened to KPJ on that play? He's hot. And I'm going, oh, my God, they're playing right now, aren't they? And then when I flip over, De'Aaron Fox just gets tossed out of the game for a brutal flagrant foul on Garrison Matthews. And I'm going, geez, I mean, who knew this game was even taking place? And then that it was actually a close game. It might have been better than any of the football for the most part. But, I mean, it was like it's the tree that falls in the forest and no one's there to see it. Who knew the Rockets played yesterday?
Yeah, I was following on Twitter, so I knew that it was going on, but I didn't watch a second of that. I was glued into the NBA. I was glued into the NFL, yeah. Especially with the Rockets' state of affairs currently. But finishing the bottom four, bringing another good player here with Jalen Green. Maybe the Rockets could be an exciting bunch next year.
You just wonder if they're waiting for another team to make a move or two so that you can see we're at full-fledged pre-trade deadline, yard sale. But they should just get ahead of the game and just start moving guys. They should start lining up their offers and realizing the young guys are all you're going to play. You're going to get the most out of every single player to see what you got. Green's still making turnovers and things that he needs to be on the floor working on. So he doesn't need to be fighting for shots with Gordon and Wood, who are trying to establish to other teams they can play. Just get some deals done and go with the kids. You won't have to worry about securing one of those lowest three in the league records so that you can get a high pick. And you can also evaluate even further and more closely the guys you have.
I don't mind being patient because you want to make sure the deal's right. Like, you don't want to be impatient and make a lesser deal than you can make if you get closer to that deadline. And deadlines spur action. We know that. Kevin Durant sprained MCL. He's out 4 to 6 weeks. Now, this does have a Rocket tie. Rockets own Brooklyn's first-round draft pick. I saw a lot of people on Twitter like, oh, Kevin Durant's out 4 to 6 weeks. Rockets own the Brooklyn's first-round draft pick. Let's keep that in mind. Settle down. The Nets are second in the Eastern Conference. They're going to get Durant back in a couple of months. They're going to be all
Harden,
right.
Still have Kyrie right. on a part-time basis. You're going to get Joe Harris back. You have a deep bench full of NBA veterans and young players that can play. Yeah, slow your roll, Kool-Aid drinking Rockets fans. Worry more about what you have you're trying to give away than the fact that the Nets might have a pick that can come into play. Stop
yeah.
it.
Yeah, the Nets are going to be just fine. The Rockets will get the Nets first. I think they have a pick swap.
Welcome
too,
to the draft's version of Garrison Matthews being available when the Nets pick. Make it the right selection.
Rockets will next be in action in Utah on Wednesday. College basketball, the new Associated Press poll is out. University of Houston and your team, Wisconsin, both in the top 10. Houston, number 10 in the country now. They moved up a spot. 37 straight weeks in the AP poll for the University of Houston. The first time that's ever been done in the history of the program. Finding ways to win. I don't even know how they're winning these games with the injuries that they've had. Marcus Sasser has been out for the year with a broken foot. Best player coming into the year. Tremont Mark out for the year with a shoulder injury. And then they lost their starting point guard in the 15-and-a-half mark of the first half on Saturday with a badly sprained ankle. They played the rest of the game without a point guard and still found a way to win.
I was going to say, another week, another injury, but another way for Kelvin Sampson to prove just how good he is as a coach and how valuable he can be to a program with what he continues to do with literally smoke and mirrors this season, keeping them not only afloat, but keeping them not only in the top 25, but now in the top 10. I mean, this is why this man is a hero in this town and should be, and more people should be paying attention to what the Cougars are doing on a daily basis because of the fact that they're not supposed to be where they are, and they're not supposed to be as good as they are with all that they've lost, and the majority of them aren't coming back. So they're going to be back next year, which means they're going to be even better next season, but for what he's able to do this season so far with all that he's lost, kudos to him. Kudos to the program, and support that program, man. That's the biggest takeaway for everybody.
Yeah, it's a gritty team, blue-collar team, kind of embodies the spirit of the city. You really appreciate the way that they play, especially as shorthanded and as hard as they play. Also unveiling some new throwback uniforms tomorrow. Those are sweet. The Elvin Hayes days with the old-school white, the red and blue trim. That's awesome.
Looking forward to you getting me a pair of those shorts. Thanks.
And I'm also I'm a big fan of your college team, Wisconsin, with Johnny Davis.
I warned you,
pick
yep.
number 8 in the country now for your Badgers.
Yeah, you know what? There's a team that, again, I think they're overachieving a lot, but they've got a guy that's going to be a first-round pick. I know his dad was a player for the CBA team that I worked for, and I had friends of mine that watched he and his twin brother grow up in La Crosse, Wisconsin, and said that one of them is a stud, the other one's a good player, and it's exactly what we've seen. You saw him live and in person and realize he's grown into a first-round pick in the NBA, and sometimes that's enough to carry a team. Big Ten schedule is hellacious, but they already beat Purdue, which is up there at the cream of the crop for the conference. They're overachieving. I don't expect them to go deep in the tournament. Like, Sampson's the kind of guy as a coach I think can just by strategy and the way that he strategizes against other teams. I think he can get you further than what Gard can do you as a head coach in Wisconsin. But great for both programs to be in the top 10 at this point in the season.
713-780-ESPN. When we come back, former NFL general manager Billy Devaney joins us next. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, we're going to get there. Before we get to that, though, we're going to get to Fitz Roofing, because Fitz Roofing is the only place you should be calling. Matter of fact, I called him this morning because I need the fence replaced in my yard. And a lot of people don't realize it's more than just roofing that Fitz does. They do fences in your yard. They do home repairs. Go to FITZRoofing.com and see all the ways they can help you, and then realize that they are dedicated to Houston and Houstonians. They're going to take care of you better than any other company. It starts with Corey, the owner, who's also the vice president of the Houston Roofers Association, so he's got credibility and he's got respect. Then you start talking about the business and the fact that they have the best warranties, that use the best products, they have the best ratings across the board, and you sit there and think to yourself, why would I go anywhere else? And especially because they also do free, no obligation inspections right from the get-go. They'll come to you to tell you what they can do. It costs you absolutely nothing, and then they'll give you an estimate. You want them to come back, you just book it and make sure that you realize you can feel safe and secure knowing they're going to do the best job around from start to finish. Check them out today, FITZRoofing.com. Better yet, get that free, no obligation inspection. Call 832-521-3001. Fitz Roofing, making a difference one home at a time.
ESPN 97.5.